And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, today is Wednesday, August 9th, and we are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino, I'm here with Darren, here with Kevin. Listen to us any way you get your podcasts, like and subscribe, follow us on Facebook, send us post thoughts, questions, give us a listen. We're going to go through the world of sports. Guys, how are you guys tonight?
Doing good.
Hanging in, doing well, ready to talk.
All right. We're going to do another potpourri night as the NFL season isn't here. It's almost upon us. We're getting ready. And you know we're getting ready when Hard Knocks starts. It's the 18th season of Hard Knocks. It's the second time the Jets have been on. First time was 2010. It's now 2023. And Aaron Rodgers has joined the fold on Hard Knocks with the New York Jets. It was a good watch last night. I kind of thought it was enjoyable. I'm the only non-Jet fan, so I kind of thought it was enjoyable. A couple of points for me right off the bat was I love the sign that Sal had on the screen, which said all gas and no brakes. That kind of started it off for me. I kind of loved it.
That was the motto from day one with the Jets.
Yep, it was.
I thought the teammates, all of his teammates were like enthralled that Aaron Rodgers was there. That's the kind of feeling I got from watching it.
It's not just teammates, it's coaches.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I know, Darren, you haven't watched Hard Knocks yet.
I have not seen it. And I'm not only a Hard Knocks guy, so I don't watch it every year like everybody else does.
But anyway. I don't watch it every year, but with the Jets, I had to. They were showing the defense, watching some of the game film from one of the practices, and Ulbrich, the defensive coordinator, stands up there, and Rodgers completes a pass, back shoulder, across the field into the end zone, and Ulbrich is sitting there going, "Those guys, there's like one quarterback in the entire NFL who could complete that pass, and he's on our team. He's us. He's one of us." And it was just, I mean, you could tell the excitement throughout that entire locker room, coaches, players, everybody's feeling it.
And it wasn't even the locker room. It was when this practice started and Aaron Rodgers came on the field and there was this whole chant going on in the crowd.
Yeah.
It was pretty wild. And Darren, I know you didn't see it yet, but a little spoiler here. There is a scene with a helicopter landing at the Jet practice, and it is the narrator of Hard Knocks, Mr. Liev Schreiber. He makes an appearance, and him and Rodgers, he's talking to Rodgers about surfing in California, so it was kind of funny. But listen, that's just my perspective from the non-Jet fan. Kev, what do you think?
Yeah, just real quick on those two, is like the Mutual Admiration Society.
Absolutely.
I mean, Rodgers was like, it's the voice of God, you know, really up a bit for Schreiber. And Schreiber's saying he's never been to one of the Hard Knock practices, apparently. Oh, this is the first time he's ever been to one. And, you know, he's fanboying over Rodgers, and Rodgers returning it to Schreiber. Rodgers going around to all the other quarterbacks. Guys, you have to go say hi to Schreiber. Say hi to him. And, God, you know, you look at Rodgers. I don't know if it can be this much of an act. He looks like he's enjoying himself.
He does.
That's the thing I got out of Rodgers, is he looks like he's so all in on the Jets.
I can't agree more. I just from watching the episode, that's the exact feeling I got. I will tell you, obviously, there is a bunch of cutting being done on the footage.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Oh, no doubt.
But I completely agree with you, Kevin. It seems like he is just loving this. Every minute of this, he's soaking it in. You know, going through these practices, watching everybody play. And the other thing was exactly what you said, which is it's everybody else too. It's the coaches. It's the players. Darren?
Well, I mean, again, didn't watch it, so I can't speak to the show. But the Jets have not had a personality led by a personality that's been the quarterback since before we watched football, guys. Okay, the last time the quarterback was bigger than anybody on this team was Joe Namath. I mean, it's not even exactly. Now, he might be the best player on the team, Rodgers. It might be Gardner. It could be Quinnen. It could be a bunch of different guys.
But Dan, wait. Not to interrupt.
Remember this team.
But that's the way Hard Knocks opens, with footage of Namath.
Yeah.
Well, so we haven't had this personality yet.
Cutting back and forth. Namath and Rodgers. Namath and Rodgers back and forth. Listen,
of course, we don't get Rodgers in his prime, and we get him a little late, but it doesn't matter because the leadership qualities and the way that the players revere him is obvious in the practice footage I've seen. Now, I didn't watch the show, but I will. I just didn't get a chance to. But, you know, the Jets have not had their star be a quarterback. Even when we talk about the two guys that got inducted into the Hall of Fame this week, Klecko was one of the stars of the Jets for a long time during his tenure, along with Gastineau and a bunch of other guys. But it wasn't Richard Todd. It wasn't Matt Robinson. It wasn't Ken O'Brien. It wasn't any of the quarterbacks he played with. And Darrelle Revis was a star, but Mark Sanchez was not the star. They didn't have a quarterback that was the leader that was going to take him to another level. And this is a guy that the whole team respects. And having a quarterback in that room that the entire team expects to do well and respects is going to be a real big difference. Now, I'll let you guys talk more about the show, but I just thought it was exciting.
Yeah.
And when you see it, Darren, Revis is on. You see Klecko back there. Some of the Jets are at the Hall of Fame game, so you see them right there. Kev?
Yeah, all the Jets are at the Hall of Fame game.
No.
Not all of them played, you know, but that's another story. But, yeah, like you said, it's just – I think Darren said it perfectly. It's just that leadership, that enthusiasm, that belief that we have a quarterback that can win his games. We're not trying to play around our quarterback. We're not asking him to manage a game. Aaron Rodgers can go out and win a game. And that's what the Jets have not had since, you know, Vinny in 98.
Yeah, the best Jet quarterback that we saw, like an overall complete quarterback, was Pennington, and then he got hurt. Right, yep. Pennington had like the leadership skills. Quarterback draws when needed to, scrambles when he needed to, complete big passes, but he didn't have the arm. So if we were down 10 points in the fourth quarter, there was no chance to come back. You know, he was just very smart. Vinny had the arm, but he didn't have the consistency. Ken O'Brien was good for a little while, but everybody always remembered the fact that he got drafted before Marino. So that no Jet fan ever really said, I was like, oh yeah, but we can have Marino right now. So what the hell is this? This is the first time in my lifetime that I'm seeing a quarterback that can lead this team. Now, again, I can't wait to watch the show, but I mean, if Gino's excited about it, I'm being honest, as a non-Jet fan, leads me to believe that it should be fun and exciting to watch.
Okay, so I out of 18 seasons, I've probably watched 16. I watch it religiously when it's on. I will tell you the most fun episode of every season is usually episode one because it's everybody just starting. It's the entrance of what's going on. And so I did think though, however, it was really good. I kind of liked a lot of the things they were doing, knowing that Rodgers really is not going to play the preseason. Okay, which is a big part of this, to be honest, right? So he's got the headset on during the game. You hear him talking about
the bomb from Wilson to
Wilson. Thank you. Yep. I couldn't get. He just wasn't going through my head, but you kind of see. You kind of get that feel that, and you hear Rodgers talking like, "Come on, get you know." They got a set. You could just see that he's already into this again. Preseason game one, so you know, not even it's the whole thing, but I thought it was good. The one drawback of the whole show, Kev, was did we have to hear DeMarcus Ware singing the national anthem? Darren, DeMarcus Ware does not have a songbird voice.
No, he does not.
Good. One point I heard from people talking about it, they made it feel like Sala seemed intimidated by Rodgers. Did you guys get that take?
I don't think intimidated. I think he was excited for him to be there as well.
I didn't get the feeling that he was intimidated, but I do get the sense that he's quite aware that this is a different team now and Rodgers is here in the building. I did get that feeling, but I didn't think he was intimidated, Darren, to be honest.
I heard people talking about it, about Rodgers the alpha male, not Salah on the team. And
you know, I see Giant that part. Fans.
Yeah, I see Giant fans talking about it. And don't get me wrong. I have nothing, you know, against, but they're like, Brian Daboll wouldn't have allowed that type of stuff. And then you're hearing things like, oh, Daniel Jones is just as good as Aaron Rodgers right now. I'm like, let's take it easy. I know he's old. Daniel Jones has had one season. And, you know, I know we won a playoff game, but it was the damn Vikings. So before the Giant fans start going crazy like they've accomplished something, he's got to do it. He's got to do it against a real team, in my opinion. But I'm not trying to downplay the Giants. They had a great year. Daboll did a great job. I'm not trying to downplay it, but I just think the jealousy of the two franchises against each other sometimes gets a little tedious and annoying.
And what did Daniel Jones have? 15 touchdown passes last year?
Yeah, no, I mean, Rodgers.
Come on. Outside of Rodgers, I had three other points. Number one, I think Rodgers against – I mean, including Rodgers in this one, but Rodgers against the Jets defense, I think, is going to – playing against a quarterback of that caliber now in practice consistently can only help improve the Jets defense.
They're not playing
against Zach Wilson every week in practice.
Didn't somebody actually make a comment about that at the practice yesterday?
I think so, yeah.
So I forget which player, but somebody actually did say that. Go ahead, Kev.
Number two, it's interesting watching Sauce Gardner and Garrett Wilson line up in practice. They showed a lot of the two of them going at each other in practice, and my goodness, when you can have the offensive rookie of the year or the defensive rookie of the year lining up against each other play after play in practice, that can only make both of them better.
No,
to me.
They're both special, which is why it makes it great. Yep. Wilson, Garrett Wilson's a top five wide receiver this year in the NFL, and Sauce Gardner already showed he's a top two cornerback in the league.
And number three, I guess, you know, Hard Knocks always points at an underdog. I think that's always been their MO in previous seasons. It looks like this year the underdog guy they're focusing on is Chaz Surratt.
Well, I think he'd make the team.
Well, he had the interception in the Hall of Fame game, and Saleh seems to love his speed. If he can show that he can make a couple plays out there, I think Surratt's definitely making this team. They've got hold the linebacker.
He was a quarterback in college that got moved to linebacker at North Carolina. His brother Sage played at Wake. He was a receiver. It was like you're watching them play against each other. It was pretty cool. And he does have all the instincts. I liked him as a college player. I was surprised he wasn't thought of higher when he came out.
And that's definitely a thing on Hard Knocks. You are right, Kev. They do like to focus on one of these underdog guys that may or may not make the team, and he's got a chance. And so,
yep.
No, good stuff. I'm looking forward to catching the show.
That was my Hard Knocks experience. I loved watching it.
The Jets are fired up this year. Now, yep. I mean, listen, there's no messing around. The Jets will open the season with Buffalo on Monday night, and they're expected to win that game, and they're expected to come out 1-0.
Yep.
Even though they might end up being a 1-point underdog or a 2-point underdog or a pick'em, the Jet fans and everybody around them expects this team to come out strong. So we're going to see what kind of team they have.
Okay. Any other NFL points while we're on the NFL?
Go with Kev first.
I have a couple. Yep. First one, I want to ask about your team, Gina. The Washington Commanders, what do you think of Ron Rivera's comments and the players being a little soft and don't like Bieniemy's aggressive attitude towards them?
I love it.
You love what? The Bieniemy?
I love Bieniemy already. I love him already.
I mean, come on, guys. You can't handle a little bit of criticism, a little bit of aggressive coaching?
That's Bieniemy's MO forever, by the way. Even in Kansas City, that was what he was known for. He got criticized a lot as the guy, you know, he's the offensive coordinator in name only. Andy calls the plays. Mahomes is a star. And I get all that stuff. But the enemy's a hard ass.
And while we're on the Commanders, I read an article that stated that there is a Native American group in Washington that has actually petitioned to bring the name Redskins back for next season because it's a name of pride and honor and all this stuff. And I'm like, I don't know where to go from here. Everything they do is to get rid of these names. And here you got the Native Americans saying, we want you to bring this name back. It's unbelievable.
To to me, the inconsistency of all this stuff. Okay, like the Indians are now the Guardians, right? But the Braves got to stay. The Chiefs got to stay, but the Redskins had to go. College teams, some of them change, some of them don't. Teams like the Warriors in college, Marquette, had to change to the Golden Eagles, but the Golden State Warriors got to stay. It's all the Seminoles stay. But the Fighting Sioux had to leave North Dakota. It doesn't make any sense. There's no rhyme or reason behind any of it. It's just whatever random person complains and whoever – I'm not trying to make fun of wokeness, but I'm making fun of wokeness. Whoever's woke in the front office that thinks that, oh, God, we're going to offend everybody by saying that the sky is blue. So let's call it gray or – stop. Nobody cares as much as you guys think they can. Nobody cares. They just want to root for their team. Gino, it's always going to be Redskins in the back of your mind. I'm not trying to say it in a negative way, but you've been calling them that since you were a kid. So have we, Kevin and I, even as non-fans of the team. It's the way it works.
Yep. Even though I still say Redskins.
We still have problems. We keep saying the Indians all the time. I mean,
the Indians. I still don't say Red Storm. I always forget. It's the Redmen to me. But the Orangemen got to stay, but the Redmen didn't. I don't know. Oh, whatever. Anyway.
All right. Any other football points, Darren?
Well, yeah, just Chris Jones still holding out. $50,000 a day. He's looking to make Aaron Donald money. $31 million is what he wants. Quinnen got $24 million. You figure he's going to be somewhere in the middle. They have not come up to an agreement yet. The one thing that stands out to me is that the reason they let Tyreek Hill go last year was because they knew that they had to pay Jones. So you know what's going to happen. They had to make a decision, and it's easier to find a Jones than a Tyreek Hill, in their opinion, having a defensive guy that can dominate as opposed to getting a wide receiver. Nothing against Tyreek. He's a stud. But that was the decision that they made, and Mahomes will throw to anybody, and he did. He threw to nobody last year, and they won a Super Bowl. So he did prove it outside of Kelsey. So that's the other NFL point I had.
Okay. And Kev, you have another point?
I was going to say – running backs, Dalvin Cook still unsigned also.
And, mm-hmm. and you know, it's funny, Kev. That's exactly what I was going to go because usually the first week of August, I start prepping for my fantasy football drafts. And the running back uncertainties that are out there are unbelievable for August 9th, I'll tell you. So, good, Kev. I'll continue in with you. So,
well, you had that one. I also wrote down Kareem Hunt. He's a free agent. He visited the Saints over the weekend. He was going to visit the Colts. Why? Because Alvin Kamara's got starting over the 3-game suspension because of violating the personal conduct policy. And then, of course, with the Colts, with whatever's going on between Jonathan Taylor and the Colts, he's now off camp, away from the team, rehabbing his ankle on his own. I mean, these running backs, they're really up against
Josh Jacobs is not even listed on their Vegas depth chart right now. They pulled Jacobs from the depth chart. Brees Hall, you don't know what's going to happen with him either. There's a lot of question marks.
You got Jonathan Taylor with an issue. You got Josh Jacobs with an issue. And then you got free agents that just haven't signed anywhere where you got Ezekiel Elliott, Dalvin Cook. You got Fournette out there still. Kareem Hunt, we know he's visiting teams. He's visited two in the last 7 days.
Yep.
It's unbelievable with all these running backs. This uncertainty is ridiculous. And I can tell you, because I already started some prep with running backs, it's a mess. I don't know how to – from a fantasy football standpoint, I have no idea how to rank these guys. Specifically, Jonathan Taylor, who, if you're ranking running backs, is probably in the top five or six. I have no idea what to even do with him because you don't even know if he's going to play. Darren?
Josh Jacobs is in the top three, and you don't know where he's going to be. Josh Jacobs had an amazing year last year, just amazing. But you also put it in when you're breaking down the running back position right now, it's becoming abundantly clear that teams don't really care about the position so much, A, and B, with the less preseason games now, these running backs have less of a chance of getting hurt in the preseason where a player like Dalvin Cook sits there and says, I'm going to go there because they just have an injury and I'm the number one guy. That's not going to happen as much because I doubt any star is going to play more than a quarter or two in any of the games. It used to be that third preseason game, you played a full half. It used to be Jason Sehorn getting hurt against the Jets. I'm not trying to bring back anything, but we all remember that. He was like the up-and-coming star, and he got hurt in the the third preseason game. And there were a lot of other players get hurt in those games. But you don't have that physicality of game three anymore. Now game three is the tune-up. Game two is they're still new and they're not really practicing hard enough, so nobody's out there hitting. And game one is just a tune-up for the backups. So it's like, well, you know, these running backs are holding out, but they're not going to get what they want. And that's a major problem.
Yep.
Okay. Any other football points before we move on, Kev?
And the one big quarterback battle, Todd Bowles has announced Baker Mayfield starting next week in week one. Kyle Trask will get the start in week two. The two teams are playing are the Steelers and the Jets. So you've got a couple of good defenses to try to figure out who's going to start in Tampa Bay.
If Mayfield can't beat out Trask, he should be out of the damn league.
Shouldn't he be out of the league already?
Listen, he was the first pick in the draft. If I remember correctly, my friend Kevin liked him a lot coming out of college.
I did.
Listen, he makes good commercials. I've been rolling a lot of people too, but you love Baker more than I did.
He makes good commercials. Come on.
Well, listen, all right. A short quarterback with an attitude never does well in the NFL. Sorry, just doesn't happen.
All right, so we're moving on, and we're going to touch on the World Cup action. The U.S. women's team was eliminated 5-4 on penalty kicks after 0-0 regulation. Darren, I'll throw it to you to start.
Okay, they're knocked out. Okay, they actually played their best game in the tournament, and I did see part of it, which I just happened to wake up. And it was on, and I put it on, and I saw part of the second half. I saw the 30-minute overtime, and then I saw the kicks. And the biggest issue that we dealt with is that, I don't know how else to put it, 20% of the people watching were excited that Megan Rapinoe missed the kick in the United States. That 60% of the people in this country that didn't watch also were ecstatic that Megan Rapinoe missed the kick and the U.S. lost. The fact that this team cannot galvanize the country because of politics is a major problem. Listen, the games are in freaking Australia. Nobody cares. It's 3:00 in the morning. The brand of soccer is not as good as watching the men, no matter what anybody tries to tell you. But the U.S. women did nothing to excite the fan base that roots for the Olympics, that roots for America. Because yep. They didn't seem like some of the girls on that team. My take is this: that most of the girls on that team are probably fantastic. Most of the ladies are probably fantastic people. But they let Megan Rapinoe be the leader. She was going for her agenda for after soccer about what she's going to be as an activist. And they all sat there and followed through behind it and made themselves a little bit less likable than they should have. That's my take. Maybe I'm being too political on it, but that's the way I feel about it. Kev?
I think that's a great take on it. You don't know. You really don't know anything outside the soccer field of any of the women on that team, except for Megan Rapinoe.
Maybe why Alex Morgan a little bit. That's it. But not even a lot. Just that she had a kid.
Okay, she had a kid. So did a couple of other the women on there too.
Yeah, but you don't even know who they are. At least you know Alex Morgan because she's been around forever. But yeah,
we know Alex Morgan. She's been around forever. She's a nice looking young lady. Julie Ertz, we know because of Zach. Hey, that's Zach's wife out there.
She's been around for a long time, too.
She's been around for a while. O'Hara, we know because she's the one that picked up the flag a couple years ago.
And she's the one that missed the last one. I felt kind of bad for her.
And we know Trinity Rodman because of her dad.
Yep.
Other than that, you know, some of the other names on there are recognized just from watching other World Cups and all. But, you know, really, it's, you know, when Rapinoe, who is so polarizing to half the country, is the face of the team, is very hard, like you said, to really rally around them. I think what would have been more, it's hard to root against Team USA.
I didn't root against. I was rooting for them to beat Sweden.
I think, you know, Rapinoe missed in the fourth round. At that point, the U.S. still was up 3-2. Nair made the save in the fourth round. So Smith gets up there with a chance to win. I think people would have been thrilled to have seen Rapinoe miss in the fourth round, but Smith to come back in the fifth round, exactly. Put it away, win the game there. She missed. Sweden scored. Nair, the goalie, stepped up and took a PK and scored. Sweden scored again. O'Hara hit the post, unfortunately. And then Sweden on the VAR replay, I did put up on our Facebook page, you know, that the the VAR replay showing the ball over the goal line by a millimeter. I mean, it was incredible.
It was about as close as anything I've ever seen outside of a horse race. Yeah, I'm being honest.
It was really close.
It was really close.
And I thought the girl made the save. She was celebrating. Sweden was celebrating.
Yeah.
Obviously VAR confirmed it. But, Kev, I mean, the thing about it is, unfortunately, is that every country in that tournament was rooting so hard for their players.
Yep.
And the United States is divided because they made it into a political issue. This should be about the girls playing soccer and the young girls playing soccer learning from this. Yep. This shouldn't be about Megan Rapinoe's opinions and views. And that's what this team has become over the last several years. The equal pay, the all. Listen, I have no problem with most of the issues that they want to fight for. But the fact is that she spits in everybody's face every chance she gets if you don't agree with her. And it turns people off. I want to watch a soccer match. I really don't care. I don't care if you're gay. I don't care if you're straight. I don't care who you're married to. I don't care what you want to do with your life. I don't care if you want to be an activist afterwards. But when you wear the U.S. uniform, represent the country and play soccer. And the fact of the matter is that she wasn't even playing for most of the tournament. And yet she was still the most famous player on that team by a lot. And she barely played.
And when she did play, she was awful.
She wasn't good. She's older. Yeah. She's 38. She's not the player she was, and she had a great career. The fact of the matter is that she made it about her. And when you make it about one player, when you're playing on a team sport like this, it's not going to go well. It just doesn't. That's my take on it, man.
I can't agree more with you. And one of your first points was the fact that, you know, half the country after this was over was not disappointed. Is just ridiculous because when the men's team got eliminated a couple of years ago, I mean, everybody was like distraught for a day. It's like, oh, come on, I can't believe we lost. Here, it's like, oh, well, you know, some people are like, oh, I can't believe we lost. And half the people are like, okay, I'm glad we lost because she deserves it.
Me and Kevin debated you on this podcast about how we thought the Americans played well against the Netherlands and thought that they were dominated. And me and Kevin were both thinking that, you know, they looked impressive. They just didn't make the breaks. I mean, but we were all like, it was all about how did America do? How did the team do? How to support our guys, looking at the golden age coming up and all the young players. This is what we were doing with the women right now. We're not doing any of that. And that's a shame.
It is.
I mean, Ken pointed out last week, there's no creativity on offense. It looks like the team is confused on what to do up front. And the fact of the matter is they allowed a polarizing person that's not even playing to be the face of the team. And so did the broadcast coverage.
Yep.
I haven't seen this bad a broadcasting job since Dan and Dave with Reebok in 1992 or 88 or whatever year it was, where they did Dan and Dave commercials for 3 months leading up. And both of them, Dan didn't even qualify for the finals of the decathlon, and Dave barely did. That's what I remember. That's when the U.S. Open had Andy Roddick featured. He got knocked out in the first round. Those are the only things I could equate this to.
And the worst part of this now is they're out, and we are all going, and who's left playing? Because now there's zero.
I will say this. So the U.S. was in the FIFA world rankings. U.S. was one, they're out. Germany was two, they didn't even make it to the knockout stage. But of the remaining eight, seven of the next nine highest-rated teams made it. So, you know, at least as far as quality of games, the games themselves should be close and competitive because you've got seven of the eight teams are ranked between 3 and 11 in the world. So the competition of the game should be good. The only outlier is Colombia, who's ranked 25th.
And they basically take Brazil's spot as the South American team that got through. Japan is the best team in Asia. They made it. Australia is the home team, so there's something interesting. England and France have hated each other since the beginning of time. Great, maybe they'll play each other. The Netherlands and Spain, also dominant male teams. Sweden beat the U.S., so that's how they got their spot. There's a reason for all eight teams to be there.
And remember, Sweden was ranked number three coming into the tournament in the world. So it's not like it was an upset.
And they've beaten this U.S. team in the past. Sweden had the most success against them.
They beat them pretty badly in the Olympics, if I remember right.
Yes, they did. And they've had a lot of success against the U.S. team.
This was not an upset.
No, the upset was the fact that the U.S. actually dominated them statistically. I didn't see the first 80 minutes of the game, so I can't speak to it. I'm just looking at the stats. But the U.S. was the better team on the field. They just couldn't put the ball in the net.
Okay. Great, Kev.
Yeah. One other soccer point. I know we keep bringing it up every week, but the
Messi, baby.
Lionel Messi playing for Inter Miami. So they were playing Dallas in the round of 16 in the League's Cup. Messi scores the first goal for Miami. Eventually, Dallas takes a 4-2 lead with only 10 minutes left in the game. They're in the 80th minute. Dallas gives up an own goal, and then Messi scores in the 85th minute to tie the game at 4. The League's Cup, at this stage, they still go right to PKs after regulation, and Messi scored the first one, and eventually Miami wins 5-3. So Miami has won 4 in a row with Messi. Messi's got 7 goals. And remember, this is a team that was 5-14-3 in the MLS season before Messi showed up. They're playing, I think it was Charlotte coming up in the next round. They were supposed to play in, I think, August 20th. That was going to be Messi's debut for MLS. One of these two teams is playing the 19th in the League's Cup, so they decided mutually to move that game. So Messi's first MLS game, if he plays, would be in Red Bull Arena on August 26th.
Where Kevin has seen a game in the past.
I've seen 2 or 3 games.
There you go.
But fun atmosphere.
Yeah, very fun.
And everything else in the it is fun.
So you know sarcasm dripping through on that.
No, I was there once.
Oh, you were there.
The first
it's a lot of fun, isn't it?
I've never been. I have seen soccer matches, never at Red Bull Stadium.
Yeah.
It's a fun atmosphere. It's a good stadium to go to for because it makes the game fun.
It's 2 hours and you're done.
Yeah.
And soccer arenas are supposed to be smaller crowds closer to the field, so it makes it a little bit better.
Yeah.
So that's it for soccer for me.
All right, Darren, can I ask you as we move on to the next topic, what the hell is going on with the Pac-12? What the hell is going on with college football? This is listen, for a guy who doesn't follow it to the nth degree like you guys do, I don't know what the hell is going on. Can you at least tell me?
Well, this is what's happening. The Pac-12 is a sad excuse right now. This is a conference that's been around forever. It's known as the Conference of Champions. Okay, out of the six original members, four still around. The only two that are out are Washington and Oregon. The first original six before the Southern California schools came in, excuse me, were Washington's, the Oregon's, Cal, and Stanford. Then all of a sudden, what happened? The Pac-12 got a bad TV deal last time out. Old president did a horrible job. They were actually on the precipice of getting Texas to join the Pac-12 no more than 8 years ago. They just about had Texas, which would have given them like a big deal. The sticking point was that they wanted Texas to give up the Longhorn Network, which Texas refused to do. So then the Pac-12 teams started to get nervous a little bit. UCLA and USC jumped ship to the Big Ten. Colorado last week decides to go to the Big 12, which is where they started, by the way. That was their original league. So then all of a sudden, they have their meeting and they come to the contract room. And the Pac-12's deal is for about $20 million plus incentives per school. Now, if you look at it, the Big 12's is about $34 million. The Big 10's is about $50 million. The SEC is in the low 40 millions. So these schools don't want to take 20 when they could be getting 30s. And what basically happened now is that big money has actually ruined college football. That's where we are. So now conferences, ACC is next, by the way, guys. We could sit here and try to pretend it's not going to happen. But for the most part, there's a legit chance that both North Carolina and Virginia, as well as Clemson and Florida State, end up in the SEC in the next move. The team that stands out right now that no one's talking about is Notre Dame. Will the Big Ten be able to pry Notre Dame? That's the one that'll swing everything.
And currently they're an independent, right?
They're an independent because they have their own football contract. But the fact is, the longer that Notre Dame goes without winning a title or being in these championship games, the less relevant they become. Because the SEC schools and the Big Ten schools have become more relevant now, which is seems like a crime, by the way. Because anyone that's been watching college football in any stretch, and even Gino as a non-fan, Notre Dame is one of the first schools you think of when we talk college football. Now it falls down a little bit. Now Alabama, Georgia are the two schools that you say, and then Ohio State. But it used to be Notre Dame and everybody else, and now it's becoming a little bit of a different thing. So I just want to make a couple of quick points about what's going on here. So when you look at it, the Civil War, Oregon versus Oregon State, they started playing in 1894. They've had 126 meetings. There's a chance this series no longer continues. The Apple Cup, Washington versus Washington State, 1900 they started, 114 meetings. The Bedlam Bell, not in the Pac-12, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, 117 meetings starting in 1904. The Ill Buck Trophy, and the two teams are still in the same conference, but they probably won't play each other much. Illinois and Ohio State, 103 meetings from 1902. The Floyd of Rosedale, Iowa versus Minnesota, 116 meetings, 1891, in the same conference, but they're not going to play every year. This game only known as third Saturday in October, Tennessee, Alabama, same conference. They played 105 times since 1901. They're not going to play every year together. And I'm that's just a few. There's going to be so many major rivalries that made this sport special that are all going to be gone. Because of big money, Kev?
And depending on what happens with the four remaining Pac-4 teams, the game.
Stanford-Cal.
I mean, for rivalry to be known as the game.
Absolutely. To be honest, the first one that the game was is Harvard-Yale. But they did steal that. But at the same time, it is still the game. You're 100% right. It's so sad that money is doing this. I mean, you have LSU, Mississippi State played 116 times. USC, Stanford have played 101 times. Little Brown Jug, Minnesota, Michigan, 104 times. All these little things that meant something to everybody. And now, because there's going to be 20 teams in every freaking conference, you can't play everybody every year. You can't even have maybe 1 year off, but we'll play four of the next five. There's no guarantee of any of this anymore. Now, Tennessee, just random. Tennessee is not going to play Florida every year. Tennessee's going to sit there and they're going to play, Vanderbilt. That's the only lock that they have on their schedule. You know, Ole Miss and Arkansas hate each other. They're not going to play every year. I mean, all these rivalries that meant so much are going to be gone. And it's just sad. It just shouldn't be. Big money has taken over the sport. And that's where we sit. The bowls, they're trying to get out of the Pac-12 commitments now after 2024 because they didn't sign up for the Mountain West. And that's most likely where Washington State and Oregon State end up.
Yep.
And the ACC now is trying to petition Stanford and Cal because they hear Florida State going away. And if Florida State goes, you know Clemson's going. And all of a sudden, these great rivalries and these great border wars and these great – fans sitting there battling each other and in a non-violent way, but going back and forth and going at each other, those things are going to be things of the past. And yeah, the sport will move on and it'll be good and all that fun stuff, but it loses that little bit of, I don't know, that pageantry that college football is known for and very special with. More so than basketball. It's just a very different feel.
And all this conference shifting, is this both basketball and football or just football?
Absolutely. It's every sport, every single sport. So now if you get at one point, Kevin, I'll pass it right to you. So now if North Carolina, say North Carolina and Virginia go to the SEC and North Carolina doesn't play Duke in basketball. What? Right. Can you imagine that 8 mile rivalry being a preseason game in early November and not seeing them again for the rest of the year? Because that's the kind of stuff that's going to start happening. Kev, sorry, let me cut you off.
It's not weird. That we talk about, I think a lot of the focus has been on football. But you look at the Big Ten, and you've got teams from Rutgers in New Jersey all the way out to UCLA and USC.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going coast to coast. Football, in these big conferences, you're going to play four road games.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have one or two close. You may have to make one big trip. But you're talking one time a year for a weekend. These other sports, basketball, baseball, When you've got to play teams across the country on a Wednesday night, or you know, try to play with the schedule, or how are you going to handle playing these other sports?
We thought it was a big deal when the Big East. Added Creighton, saying, "Oh, St. John's going to play Creighton in women's volleyball on a Wednesday. What the hell's going to happen?" And that's nothing compared to Washington State or Rutgers or Maryland. Yep. I mean, you know, you're talking about that's a trek. It's very sad for the other sports, particularly a lot of the female sports.
Yeah,
that don't get the notoriety. There's no female football where they play once a week. There's women's basketball where they're playing, you know, road trips where, you know, they better get paid because these are now athletes now. These are no longer have the opportunity to be student athletes. These are athletes with tutors because they're not going to be in class at all during their seasons.
These are no longer regional conferences where you're, you know, yeah, it's a day of travel, you know, a good bus ride, maybe a flight in or whatever, but you're talking a day in and out. No cross-country flights. You know, you're going to go out and play. You know, you're going to expect a basketball team to go fly across country where they all of a sudden got to take a road trip and spend, you know, spend a week out there to play all the teams on the opposite coast. You know, these are, despite what everybody says about the money, you know, these are still student athletes.
No doubt.
There are a lot of players in all sports who are going to college, who have the chance to go to college for free because they are athletes. But first and foremost, most of these athletes are students, and they're there to get a degree, you know, especially in the smaller sports. This is just going to hurt everything.
We're not going to know who's playing who.
We don't know what the conferences are. We're not going to be used to anything anymore. It's a bad change.
Well, and the other thing is, just remember that it used to be where, like, let's just say the Big Ten, okay? Say you go to Purdue, all right? And you're going to go on a football road trip up to Minnesota. No big deal. But who the hell is going to fly across the country and be back in class for Monday? It doesn't happen that way. You're not going to be able to bring your fans with you. It's only going to be the parents and the rich donors. And the student sections, which are the exciting part of college football, will not be a factor anymore. And that's what they've done. Money is finally overtaking the sport.
Yeah, that's good point. I didn't even think of the fans' perspective either. Yeah, I was thinking about these students in the sports. But the fans are just
the guys in the RVs that are going to drive, you know, to any stadium the Thursday because they have all this money in the world. They don't have to work and they're tycoons. Yeah, they'll be fine, and they'll have all their friends with them and all their cronies, and they'll be paying for the players and paying for everything else or whatever, the NIL, all that stuff. But the fact of the matter is the average college kid is not going to be able to afford to make most of these trips. And you know, and that, listen, you're living it right now. Gino and I never have. Your son goes to South Carolina. Okay? It's a big deal in that respect that he loves going, watching the Gamecocks play at home. I'm sure now as he's in sophomore, junior year, he might go on a road trip and try to go with the fan base to see them play a different school. But if it gets too far away, like in the Big Ten, that can't happen. Well, you can't see the game you want to. This is not basketball where it's during spring break. This is football. This is during the school year until you get to the playoff. So just crazy. I don't know. I just don't like the direction of the sport right now. Any of the college sports. Gee.
Okay. Any other comments on college right now before we move off? Okay.
I could talk for days, but no.
Thanks for the insight into what's going on, because I will tell you that it's me looking at this. I just think it's chaos right now. That's the only thing I think it is. It's chaos. I'm trying to keep up with it, and I can barely keep up with it. So, all right, let's move to some baseball. We got a lot going on. Pennant races are really heating up. Tonight, by the way, Michael Lorenzen for the Phillies, who's just acquired from Detroit, threw a no-hitter. He threw 124 pitches, which is kind of a little crazy because they don't let anybody go 124 pitches. He walked four. Philadelphia wins 7-0. That's one of the things going on.
Kev? Just a quick comment on that. Last week I said Detroit tried to trade out. I said they couldn't get Eduardo Rodriguez. You were like, oh, they did make a trade. You said Lorenzen G, and I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot. He's not nothing special. Doesn't know hitter next time out. That's how good I am at this. Anyway. Yep.
Second start with the Phillies.
You, Gino, I didn't have it. You did.
All right, just one of the guys that got traded. That's all. Kev?
Yeah, Mets have got two quick points. Number one, in some ways, when you look at the lineup, when you've got Mendick and Amante and Ortega and Stewart and Vogel back in there, I can't wait for the season to be over with that lineup. I don't want to see this in spring training, never mind in August.
And Brett Beatty gets sent down?
And Brett Beatty gets sent down. And here's where I was going to bring the two Yankee fans in. So Beatty's struggling. He was 0 for 18 on the last road trip, down to under 220, not playing well defensively. And they said, all right, you need a timeout. We're sending you down. As opposed to, and this was a big conversation that you two have had previously about Anthony Volpe. Do you send a struggling player down to AAA? I think right now, Beatty was looking so bad. I think it was the right move. Hopefully he can go down there, get a little bit of his confidence back, and hopefully be back up in September 1st when the rosters expand by, you know, two or three, whatever the new rule is. He needs to get back up here, definitely, in September. But hopefully this just gives him a little reset, gives him a chance to sort of get back into the swing of things and improve. Guys, what do you guys think?
Gino,
I'm not against sending him down, but yep. Here's where I don't personally agree with it. You're a team that's not winning. You're not going to wind up getting into playoffs. Basically, you've called up everybody else. So having another guy up here that's going to try to work through this does, to me, it's an irrelevant situation at this point. If this happened with Alvarez in June, before everything, basically the season went up in flames, I'd probably say, okay, send them down, let them come back up. But here, I don't know what sending them down. I mean, you know.
Now, how about the fact that
– down there, so I mean, you know.
How about the fact that even though he's not good, look good there defensively at third base, and he's even struggling a little bit here, but the fact that you do have another young guy who's getting a chance to play third base fairly regularly, and Vientos at least is still another young guy who you're looking at there. You know, you didn't send Beatty down, and you're playing Danny Mendick like, there every day.
Sounds like a similar position. Sounds like a similar conversation with Volpe and Peraza, but
I'm going to make one point to you real quick. Do you want Vientos to be your third baseman? I'm asking you. Do you think Vientos is your third baseman? Do you think there's any chance he's your third baseman?
What you're seeing right now, no.
I mean, at any point, did you think that Vientos could play third base for this team at a major league level?
Not that you heard as he was coming up.
So to me, yeah, I get the idea of a young player you're taking a look at. You're looking at him in a wrong position. He can't play there. So the fact that you're doing it is a joke. Here's the one thing Volpe had that Beatty didn't, okay? And I know that Gino and I disagree on this. Every, you know, Volpe would strike out every third at bat, like Gino pointed out. But every couple of games, he would get a clutch hit or steal a big base or hit. It wasn't like he did it all the time, but he didn't have an 0 for 18 stretch where nothing happened. He would win a game for you. He'd come up clutch in a big spot, and then you'd feel like, okay. And then he'd go 0 for 16 or 0 for 12 or whatever it was. Then in another big spot, he'd get another big hit. Volpe has done that all year long. He hasn't been good, but he hasn't been awful. I feel like Beatty at 0 for 18 is a little scary because he seems like he's losing confidence. Well, I didn't think Volpe was. I think Volpe just had a little bit of a swing thing. And the Yankees really are still in the race and had nobody better to bring up. Peraza came up and hit worse than Volpe. Nobody wants to see IKF playing short. So what were the Yanks going to do?
Yep.
I mean, and you saw what they did at the deadline. They did nothing. And now they're going to lose two out of three to the freaking White Sox. This is what the Yankees are. The Mets, by the way, have a question. Is Buck managing for his job? Because this team has shown nothing since they made these moves. Listen, this team still had a lot of talent on the offensive side of the baseball after these trades, and they've done nothing. They've been horrible. One win, or tonight's the second win since the trade deadline. They've been horrendous.
Two out of three for the Cubbies.
Good for them. They beat a team that was battling. Ottavino tried to lose it. He didn't tonight. Somehow
he gave up a home. Bickford came in against them. Bickford came in and closed the door.
The Yankees are going to lose 2 out of 3 to the White Sox. The Mets are going to win 2 out of 3 from the Cubs. But congratulations. But they look dead. They got swept by the Royals. Royals don't sweep anybody. Is Buck in danger of getting fired? Do you want Buck back next year?
Not with what you think the roster is going to look like. If it's really going to look like a younger roster and you're going to start integrating some of the younger guys in there, you can't have Buck managing.
No, I'm with you. G, do you want Boone back?
No. I don't want Boone back at all, to be honest.
I don't want Cashman. I don't want Boone. I don't want anybody on the Yankees. But for the Mets, I think Buck is managing for his job. And right now, I'm not impressed with anything I'm seeing from him. These guys are not responding. And Alonso's actually hitting homers right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. The Yankees have become a joke. A damn joke. The Yankees and the Red Sox are battling for last place like they both want the position in last place in this division. Freaking awful. Just awful.
So the Yankees going into tonight were 4.5 games out of the last wild card spot. We got Baltimore, Minnesota, Texas in. Tampa Bay, Houston, Toronto is the wild cards. Seattle's two games behind that. The Yankees 4.5. In the NL, you got Atlanta, Milwaukee, and the Dodgers in. Philadelphia, San Francisco, and the Cubs and Miami, who are tied going into tonight. And then Cincinnati, a half game back. Arizona, 2 games back. San Diego, 4 games back with the last wild card. So a number of teams still in it. Any comments on what's going on, guys? I mean, Baltimore's playing well. There's a lot of things going on. Darren?
Well, just a couple of quick things. Cleveland has completely tanked, and Seattle has closed the gap since both teams looked like they were selling. So Seattle, even though it didn't look like they made any moves to try to improve, have suddenly played well.
They've won six in a row going into
today. Absolutely. They're tied right now with the Padres 1-1. Cleveland is completely tanked. So now they're down 4.5 in a division they were down 1.5 going into. They're 3-7 in the last 10 going into tonight. Tampa's rebounded a bit, and then McClanahan's probably gone for the year. So what does that say for Tampa's chances going forward? He's their ace. I don't know if it gives them much of a shot in the postseason. It might. I just can't see it. The Cubs, like you pointed out last week, the Cubs didn't do a lot, but Cincinnati and Milwaukee have been both tanking a little bit. Cincinnati in particular, who did nothing. Another team that sold their fan base, we won't get you a pitcher. We won't help you guys out at all. And now they've tanked to the point where the Cubs can steal this division relatively easily right now. They're right there. I think that's really interesting. Arizona made moves. They've tanked. The Angels made moves. They've tanked. The Padres made moves. They haven't played well. There's a lot of stuff that you're looking at. Miami's fallen off, and they made a bunch of moves. I mean, it's been really crazy. Teams that have done nothing have played well, except for the Guardians, and teams that spent a lot of money to try to improve have done nothing. Kev,
well, Houston's played well since the deadline, but Texas played better. Texas has won 8 in a row.
8-2 in the last 10, but 8 in a row, absolutely.
Like you said, the Angels. They added to try to help Shohei make the playoffs, and they're hopefully getting trapped back. They lost 7 in a row to go the other way. Like I said, we mentioned Seattle's won 6 in a row to get right back into the mix of the wild card. The NL, you know, the guys chasing, like you said, Arizona's 2-8. San Diego lost 3 in a row going into tonight. Miami's 3-7. Don't any of these teams want to win and get into the playoffs?
It doesn't seem like it, does it?
No.
It's a little crazy. I mean, what it's telling me right now when I'm looking at this, and G, maybe you'll disagree with this, but it looks like you're stunned if it's not the Braves or the Dodgers coming out of the National League, because no team looks like they're even close to these two teams. And in the American League, to me, still the Astros are the favorite right now, no matter how well Baltimore's playing. I mean, Baltimore had the Astros on the ropes last night. And give up the grand slam to Tucker, and they lose. Baltimore, another team that didn't do much at the deadline. I would have liked to have seen them add one more veteran. I mean, they made one move. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more. But, Baltimore,
The Orioles.
I can't see them beating the Astros out. And I can't see the Rangers beating them out either. Right before, now, you can't see the Astros are the favorite.
Before tonight, Baltimore is 70-43. They are 27 games above 500. It's crazy.
And while we're talking about Baltimore, I just want to jump onto a slight tangent here. Only Peter Angelos, one of the biggest morons ever to walk the face of the earth, can find a way to take a team that's dealing with their own curse from the Yankees. The Jeter Jeffrey Mayer curse of the Jeffrey Mayer ball with Tony Tarasco looking up like he should have caught it. Where he actually suspends his announcer. These are the stats the announcer gave out, okay? Wasn't much. All he was tell the truth. They struggle at the Trop. He pointed out these stats. They were 0-15-1 in the last 16 series they played in Tampa. The last series win they had before this year was in 2017 in June. They were 3-18 at Tampa in the last 21 games before this season. It's all the guy said. Angelos didn't like the negativity and suspended him. These are facts. It's not like he went out there and ripped the freaking team. Kevin Brown
opinion.
These were facts.
This was not opinion. This was not him ripping the Orioles just to rip the Orioles.
He wasn't ripping the Orioles at all. He was talking about how they're turning it around. They were 3-2 against them this year. He was talking about the positive. And Angelos, who's a moron, suspended him. I mean, the last time Baltimore was in first place this late was 97. That was that year, the Jeffrey Mayer year, the whole thing. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I don't know, man. Only this idiot could take defeat from the jaws of victory. Baltimore hasn't had this kind of fun and excitement in baseball in forever. And for this guy to try to ruin it by suspending Kevin Brown. And then the crowd last night chanting, "Free Kevin Brown."
Well, because they know that Angelos is an idiot for
it's
doing
a
this.
Moron. I mean, this is the worst owner in baseball, probably, outside of the A's. This is it. It's just sad. Sorry. Just had to point that out while talking about the Orioles, guys.
Yep.
I have a couple of interesting stats if you guys want to hear them real quick. There are only 10 guys in the major leagues hitting over 300 that qualify. Arias hitting 372, and you expect Freeman and Acuna. But the other four other guys are not guys you would expect to be in the top 10. Naylor's hitting 306, Arcia's 302, Stott hitting 302, and Yandy Diaz continuing to have a great year at 322. Now, Kev, when I say Pete Alonso, would you call it a great year for Pete?
No.
Well, but he's got 34 homers while hitting 226, right? But he looks like a monster offensive batting average guy next to Berger's 26 homers hitting 213. Schwarber hitting 30 homers hitting 183. And Muncy's 27 homers hitting 192. It makes Pete look like he's a base hit machine. 10 guys have over 140 innings. The leader in innings this year, Brandon Webb in his 99 record with 154. The only other guy over 150, Gerrit Cole, 150.1. Snell leads the league in ERA, 261. His record isn't even 500. Steele, 268. Eovaldi, 269. And Cole, 275. Only four pitchers in the major leagues that qualify under 3 in ERA. So nobody's pitching that great.
I was shocked to hear Senga was in the top 10 in ERA.
Yes. Strider's stats still the most impressive to me. 211 Ks in 132 innings pitched. You don't see that in this generation anymore. These guys are striking people out left and right. Otani, batters are only batting 186 against him. Best of any starting pitcher. Hader, as a reliever, they're only hitting 121 against him. And on the other end, Patrick Corbin, batters are hitting 299 against him. Thought it was interesting. These stats just kind of jumped out at me, so I figured I'd share them. But, my God, the amount of power hitters that aren't hitting makes you really appreciate guys like Otani and Acuna, who get on base, get hits, do a lot of amazing things. Freddie Freeman. Can you imagine if Freeman didn't leave for the Dodgers and he was still on the Braves? How scary would that team be? Unbelievable. Baseball is alive and well everywhere but New York, where it's miserable and brutal, and that's why we're all excited about the Jets and the Giants here. That's all I can say.
I think that's a good punctuation mark. Kev, any final thoughts?
On baseball, no.
Okay.
Other
what do you got, Kev?
Real quick, NBA, the Knicks re-signed Josh Hart today. 4 years, $81 million. Almost seems like a bargain with some of the contracts we've seen handed out this offseason.
Well, I mean, obviously Jaylen Brown's worth $270 million more than Josh Hart. Anyway, that's just me.
And apparently FIBA, the basketball international thing, has their World Cup. Didn't know it until I saw last night that the Team USA was playing Puerto Rico. But there are a couple of local guys on the team. You got Hart and Brunson from the Knicks, and you've got Michael Bridges and Cam Johnson from Brooklyn. So if you're interested in watching any NBA players, especially local guys, try to find the FIBA World Cup. That'll be starting up in a week or so.
Apparently, they expect Brunson to be the leader and captain of this team.
Yep.
They say he's the best leader on the squad, and they say he's a natural leader. I think that it's been obvious to us since we watched him play in college. He's been that kind of player.
Yep.
Anything else, Kev?
Horse racing.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw it today. I saw it today. Funny Side passed away at the age of 23.
I did not see that.
So Funny Side, of course, back in 2003, well, the year before, group of 10 friends up in Saratoga get together, put the money together, buy this horse, Funny Side. All of a sudden, he goes out there, becomes the first New York bred ever to win the Kentucky Derby, follows it up with the Preakness, and winds up running third in the Belmont to Empire Maker. Back then, you know, it was still 25 years since Affirmed won the Triple Crown. You know, it was still another 12 years before we saw American Pharoah. That was in an era where War Emblem came close the year before, won the first two, lost to Sarava. Yep. Sarava, yep. And then the year after, of course, was another great horse everybody loved, was Smarty Jones, who lost to Birdstone in the Belmont. So he had three straight years where horses were going for the Triple Crown. But Funny Side was one of the ones that really was just a fun story. And
local bred always, meant a lot to us in this area anyway, that a horse racing fan. Yep. So, of course, I go to Saratoga last week. And for the first time ever, I go there and they rain us out and lightning us out after seven races. So I only got 7 of the 11 on the card. This was one of those moments where me and Dad picked the wrong day. Just one of those things. And usually better as the card goes on. So I was down at the time and I finished down. That's the way it works out.
How was Erod Ortiz that day?
He couldn't get water from a freaking boat. He was doing great going into it, but he did not have a good day that day.
I know nobody else cares, Darren. You do. You know, Ortiz is hitting the board at over 65% of the races.
He's tearing it up. I was doing a lot of first and thirds that day. I really couldn't get it together. I just kept missing. And I had long shots that were in. I just couldn't put them together with the right favorite. I just kept missing. There was a lot of races where, if you're a horse racing fan, when you take a lot of horse races that go from the turf to the dirt, and a lot of maiden races at that, where you don't have a lot of experience to look at. We had 4 maiden races. 3 of them went from turf to dirt. And most of them had never run on the other surface. And you're sitting there, I really don't.
Yeah.
You know, they're going by trainer on, you know, you're going that way. It becomes a lot harder to do. But it was, always a great time. I know you're going up this weekend, Kev?
Probably not. I was hoping to, but got too much trying to get Junior back down to South Carolina.
Gotcha. Well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to bring up a negative.
No, that's okay.